everyone, and welcome back to the Charity Forms podcast. We are now well into our Inspiring Communicators series, and it was only right to have my favourite come along and join us for a chat. He is the digital whiz and full of fun, and his name is Mr. Ender Guinan. And I was really bracing myself to say your last name, so do tell me if I said it right.
No, you've made a really good job of it. Thank you very much, Lauren.
Welcome. So I do like to do a bit of a backstory as to how I know my guests. Okay. And I fell in love with Ender as soon as I saw him. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be his friend. He doesn't think I'm going to be his friend. So every time I see him at Charity Comms event, I just grab him and I scream, "Hi Ender, how are you?" And he's so lovely. And I thought, you definitely are someone I need to talk to and get to know a bit deeper. Use this space to do so.
Wow. Well, I think that's the type of introduction one can only dream of. By the way, listeners, it's going to go. It's downhill from here.
No. So when I first met Ender, he had an entourage. His whole team loved him. They came in full force to support him. So I was like, he must be extraordinary. I need to talk to him. So Ender.
Well, I'm honoured to be here.
So I would love to know a little bit more about you. How did you get into comms? What was your journey like? And what inspires you as a charity communicator?
Well, it was interesting that you mentioned the entourage who came along with me from Sarcoma UK. I mean, one of the best things about my job is working alongside people who really mean what they do. I mean, there's a real sense that what they do is important and that they can bring about change. You know, it's a kind of a collegiate thing. They're not just punching the clock. And that brings me neatly into my career path. And I think, like most people, it hasn't really been a straight line into charity comms. I started my career in education. I was working in a university in Ireland for what we call access, but I think over here you call it maybe, is it widening participation? So basically, yeah. So when you have outreach programs designed to get students from non-traditional backgrounds into education. And one of those groups was people with disabilities. Physical disabilities or learning disabilities, mostly people with disabilities such as dyslexia. So when I was working there, the whole thinking was that these are people who need to adapt to the environment. So we shoved technology at them, or we gave them extra time in exams or other things like that. But what struck me was that actually maybe the environment should change a little for them, because when I was working with students as a kind of an educational technology person, there they were, they had their own phones to check their spelling. They knew how to get their computers to read notes back to them. They were using business planning software to take their notes in a more visual way, so it was easier to comprehend. And then they had developed all these networks online where they would share notes and materials with each other. So I think we were doing things the wrong way around. So the learning environment, I thought, could adapt to these people as opposed to making them the ones that stuck out and having to fit in. So I guess, you know, to bring that up to comms, it showed me that digital communications can be really empowering. So when people are perhaps isolated or disadvantaged in some way or need something, there are solutions there in digital. So I think a real attraction for me is helping people to build communities or to somehow to become empowered.
That is very inspiring, I must say. Really lovely. Are you still in touch with the organization that you used to work with?
Yeah. I mean, again, it was like such a, I've been very lucky that the last two jobs I've had, your proper jobs, it had the same type of people, you know, people who were interested in doing something which was, you know, a little bit more than just maybe helping to make someone else make money. I mean, it was actually around trying to empower people, to give people access to things that maybe they wouldn't normally get, or to help them to help themselves, that sort of thing. I mean, with sarcoma, everyone who has cancer has so many barriers in their way. There's still a stigma around it, I think, less so as time goes by. But something like sarcoma is a lesser known cancer, and it's even more isolating. We had a campaign last year which we called The Loneliest Cancer, and I think it's one that's hard to explain. A GP might see only one or two people with sarcoma in their entire lifetime. there isn't enough research being done on it. So it's very tough to attract investment from, you know, big pharmaceutical companies. But yet there's all sorts of wonderful things happening in little pockets all over the world. And being in digital comms means that I can shine a light on some of those good things that are being done and give hope to people over here who might not otherwise hear about it. Or we can be a conduit for people to share their stories and make the world a little less lonely, maybe, for people with sarcoma. So we can show the progress is happening, or we can share disappointment when things go so well. But there is a sense that, you know, people are not alone. And because of digital comms, you can kind of, it's a bit of a privilege. I mean, we all need to pay the bills. We all need to do work to keep us from going insane. But if you're able to do all of that and also help people out, then it's pretty much a privilege, I think.
Definitely. That actually brings me on to my second question. You're not actually the first cancer charity person that we've had on the podcast. We actually had Karen Hobbs on our first episode from the Even Peel. And I think it's quite interesting. Obviously, she's an advocate for women cancer, but sarcoma is a really rare form of cancer. And I've noticed, again, as I mentioned in her podcast, that in this pandemic, other illnesses have been pushed to the background and services have kind of become limited. So how have you been able as a cancer charity to react in terms of engaging supporters, but also within the charity? What are you doing now that's different from what you were doing before?
Yeah, it's it's interesting what Karen was saying. I mean, but we would identify a lot with that. I mean, the pandemic has brought about so much uncertainty for people, and you know, for people being treated with cancer, uncertainty is not what you want at this time. You know, appointments are cancelled. People were afraid to attend because of their immune system being compromised. They weren't allowed to see friends and family. You know, we're hearing these awful stories about people not being able to hug their grandchildren. And, you know, this is a time when they need support and a bit of love and all they can get. So our first priority at Sarcoma UK was to try and get our hands on the best information we could and remove the ambiguity, because there was a lot of confusion at the beginning, and then try to communicate that as best we could to the supporters. You know, we had a special section on the website, and that just the hits to that sword. We have a support line where we have sarcoma specialists who you can talk to, and calls to that quadrupled. So basically our job was to try and get accurate information out there in a calm way to the people who needed it. I mean, internally, it's kind of different too. I mean, I'm sure just as everybody at Charity Comms, we're all working remotely now, and yet things have gone smoothly, interestingly enough.
You know, confident.
No, I wasn't so confident at the beginning either. But it was interesting. We had two campaigns running, which involved other teams within the charity. And normally, if we were all in the office, I guess, you know, we'd be called out to a room and we would have a meeting about it. And then we'd have a meeting about having another meeting. But instead, everybody started using Microsoft Teams. And it's almost like it's fast forwarded our adoption of these technologies that kind of makes things a lot easier. So, I mean, that's one of the good things that's happened. And particularly for me, I think I quite like working like that. And it kind of made people a little bit more accessible, in fact, than if we were in the office. But of course, there's the negative side, you know, that the whole sector is in crisis because of the drop in fundraising that's coming through. And, you know, that's a shame because we had plenty of plans to do lots of things, but, you know, we've had to cut a major research funding program. We had people in furlough. We can't plan too far ahead anymore. And I don't think my poor colleagues in fundraising, I don't think they've stepped down from red alert since March.
You've actually touched upon my next question, because you mentioned so many good things that have come out of the pandemic. But again, like you said, some of the challenges that the fundraising team are facing, etc. What, as a digital comms manager, what are currently the biggest challenges working in the third sector at the moment? Also, if you don't mind me, you know, sharing your business, Ender did have COVID, so that's another thing to battle with, trying to deal with everything that's going on in the world. So how was that for you, actually, and how were you able to juggle that alongside work?
It was interesting. It's quite ironic because I remember when I first manifested the symptoms, it was on March the 12th, which happens to be my birthday. No. So I was like, happy birthday to me from the universe. But in the days leading up to that, we had, we'd put together a COVID task force. So basically we were going, well, what happens if we have to lock down and what happens if this happens? And ironically, I was part of that team, and then I didn't get to attend the second meeting because everything shut down immediately. I had COVID. It was horrible. I wasn't able to work. I didn't need to go to hospital, thankfully. I didn't have any of the breathing issues, but I wouldn't wish it on anybody. It's a horrible, it's like a really nasty flu, but what's different about it and what surprised me was just the exhaustion that goes on for weeks afterwards. I mean, after you get over the sweats and after you get a little bit of energy back, I would go for a walk for 10 minutes and then I would need to come back and take a nap for an hour. And that went on, that kind of long tail of fatigue. So I think that meant I couldn't go back to work either. I really had to stop and say, I need to get better. And I think that it was interesting. It was only from following things like Twitter and seeing people's experiences again in real time, where you could read about people, you know, people saying it's day 24 and this is how I feel, because this is a completely new illness. This was authentic material coming in, and it kind of made me feel, okay, I'm not going crazy. You know, there's nothing else wrong with me. This is actually just a symptom of this condition. It's just that it hasn't been talked about very much because people don't know about it. But again, there you go, social media bringing people together and dispelling myths and whatnot. So that was really useful. I mean, as a social media manager, it's always difficult to find new ways to cut through because people are bombarded with messages all the time. And I think right now, people are a little bit traumatized because, you know, life as we knew it changed really quickly. And people are more concerned about, you know, their loved ones becoming ill, themselves becoming ill. They're worried about their job. Is it going to still be there in a couple of months? I mean, it's a really stressful time for people. So I think, you know, as a charity, I mean, what we need to do is we have to try somehow and communicate that, you know what, we're also in trouble. And the things that we do in terms of supporting people or investing in research, you know, that's all under threat because our fundraising has been sliced in little pieces, but we still have to try and keep a tone of, you know, we don't want to panic people. People are already going through enough. So it's an interesting time at the moment where we have to try and just strike the right tone. I mean, we want to be friendly and approachable as always, but we have to be conscious of being positive, but serious.
Definitely. True. It's trying to be as genuine also as possible. And I know that's, creating a community that feels genuine isn't always easy, but you've done a great job of that with the London Marathon Facebook group for sarcoma.
Gosh, yeah.
How did that come about?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, I really, really feel for everyone who signed up to do the London Marathon because there's been so much uncertainty about it. And, you know, they put in so much work in terms of training and they put in so much work in terms of fundraising. And then, you know, it's been postponed. Okay, postponed to when? We'll tell you later. And then, so it was very frustrating for them. I mean, a few years ago, we created this marathon club, and we would invite people taking part to come to London for a day, and we'd have guest speakers, you know, people who had run the marathon before, people who had some fundraising tips, and we'd just kind of maybe blow off steam a little bit and have a giggle. And then about 2 years ago, we decided to replicate that online. And so we created a Facebook group. And, you know, it's been a really positive experience. You know, people are kind of, you know, sharing awful photographs of the blisters that they're getting. And, you know, they're getting sympathy. They're kind of asking for tips, you know, when they're a bit, when they feel a bit under the weather or that they're not raising enough or that sort of thing, you know, people just rush in to support them. And it's just been a really lovely, positive experience. But this year we could see the frustration building because of all of the uncertainty. So we used it to be brutally honest with them. And I mean, my colleagues from fundraising, when we're there, we use our own names. You know, we don't post from Sarcoma UK. We post from our own names. So we're deliberately making this human. And I think, a good example of this would be Friday before last. The organizers of the marathon had a webinar, a Q&A webinar for charities to kind of let them know what was happening. So we told our group that this is happening. We're going to attend. We have a few questions ourselves. We're not entirely sure about X, Y, and Z things. So we're hoping that we'll get more clarity and we'll come back to you with the information when we have it. And that has made a huge difference. You know, they feel that they are supported, that we've got their backs, that we're being really honest and authentic with them. And it seems to work.
That's amazing. Mm. The fact that you've still been able to encourage fundraising, even in a time when people can't meet anymore and event isn't even going on anymore. So it's like, what's the point?
Yeah. Amazingly, we had, you know, people in the group when, you know, we were writing these apologetic messages saying, gosh, we're really sorry that this is happening and it must be so frustrating. And we had people coming back and going, don't worry about it. It means more time to fundraise.
Mm.
I mean, people's spirit is just, you know, they're amazing.
That's what you need, especially. Mm. Very encouraging. And I guess that's great content for you as well, to show people that regardless of what's going on, you can still do your bit.
Absolutely.
Talking of doing your bit, you've done your bit for us many a time. And I couldn't not plug our mentoring scheme. For those who don't know, Charity Commons runs a mentorship scheme along with our many other services. And this is essentially a relationship based around peer-to-peer support or form of mentoring, which provides reflective space for everybody to have a chat. And I wanted to specifically ask you, Menda, because you've both been on a recipient and a giver of mentorship. So I wanted to see what your perspective was like on the service and how you found it beneficial.
Sure. I'm going to have to say something which will hopefully surprise you. it's all good, don't worry. I mean, first can I say that, you know, what a genuinely valuable service that this is, and you know, some of my colleagues also do it, and it's invaluable. And the fact that it's kind of free and available and people make themselves available to do this is it's a wonderful service. So first of all, I want to say thank you. I was a mentor, which I thoroughly enjoyed, I have to say. I mean, it's first of all, you're meeting someone who is, you know, usually a younger person who's working in the sector, and they're fired up enough to seek out a mentor. So it feels, you know, it's valuable. And it's not just me as some old, you know, wise old buzzard imparting wisdom.
It's kind of old, stop it.
Yeah, I know. But you're also getting an insight. I feel like Madonna, as in surround yourself with younger people and just suck out all of those ideas. but it's also getting an insight into, you know, the different experiences that they may have, or kind of the different ways that other organizations do things. So I found it really valuable, actually, to be a mentor. However, I was not a good mentee. I wasn't. I didn't take advantage of what was offered. And I can say that, you know, COVID got in the way and deadlines get in the way. But on reflection, I think I just wasn't ready to do it.
Mm.
So one tip I would say that if you, you know, to respect the fact that someone is making time to give the benefit of their wisdom or experience or willingness to help, just make sure that you're ready for it, because it's too valuable to not take advantage of properly. So I'm going to wait. I'm going to try again. And when I'm in a better headspace for it, I'm definitely going to reapply, because the experience for me as a mentor was so good. I would really like to benefit from that. And I have some ideas. I think I need to maybe just be a little bit more focused on what it is I want to get from it. And I think maybe I hadn't worked that out fully.
Can I ask, in terms of you mentoring someone, what did that relationship look like? Was it weekly that you spoke, or when they had a question, they just throw it to you? How did it look like for your mentee?
Yeah. Well, for my mentee, we met, I think once a month, we had a formal sit down with a cup of coffee and a check-in, how's everything going? And we would set some tasks. You know, it wasn't like doing homework, but it's like, well, what are the type of things you're working on right now? What do you feel that we could tackle in terms of maybe something tangible. So it wasn't just getting together and kind of just talking, even though that can be okay as well. We did have targets as to what we want to achieve by the end of the year, perhaps. And then in between that, the email was always open and the phone was always open. So it wasn't like he was saying, I have this problem, how do I fix it? It would be, I have some ideas, can I run them by you? You know, that sort of stuff. So yeah, so I guess it worked well, I think, because we were strict enough with ourselves to introduce a little bit of formality into it. So it wasn't just a free for all when we got together, just a chat house. So I thought that was good to have a little bit of structure.
Yeah. So would you recommend anybody trying to pursue looking for a mentor to have a real goal or target?
Yeah. I think particularly if you want to advance a little in your career, and you want to talk to someone who is at that level, you know, that sort of target is in what sort of hoops do you think you may need to jump? What sort of skills will be important at that level? What do you already know? What are the gaps? That sort of thing.
So did you have a mentor in your earlier comms career?
I didn't. And I so wish I had. I mean, again, I think a lot of people in comms just end up coming into it in a very zigzag fashion, as in, you know, circumstances change or your opportunities arise. I think it's quite rarely a direct career path. I mean, but I would have loved to have spoken to someone in comms before I properly got into it. I think there was a lot of learning on the job, and there was a lot of, I guess, using transferable skills, as they say. But I would have benefited from it, I think. And the fact that Charity Comms offer this as a service is amazing. So I'd say to anyone, if you're not familiar with it, read up on it. If you are familiar with it and you're thinking about it, I would think very seriously and go for it.
Perfect. I think you've sold it enough for me. So
okay.
To the next question.
Check it in the post.
Thank you. So, in a past life, you were a freelance copywriter.
Mm.
I wanted to touch upon this specifically because, like I mentioned many a time in this chat, we still are in the midst of a pandemic, and circumstances are changing by the day. And so it's important to have another option. And I'd like to basically hear about tips and advice that you may have on people maybe looking to start out as a freelancer, maybe in copywriting or any other thing, and how to build their own client base and have their work.
Well, I've got three tips if you've got time for that.
Oh, hit me. I'm ready.
Okay. I mean, the first one is you have to tap your contacts for leads. You know, almost every client that I had when I was a freelancer was because of a recommendation from someone I already knew. And that included getting into Sarcoma UK. I was hired as a freelancer to give their websites an audit 5 years ago, and then they let me stay. And it wasn't just because I knew the passwords for the Twitter account at that point. So tap your contacts for leads. You know, that means having the confidence in your own abilities as well, because I think that sometimes we feel, well, I can't tell someone that I'm a copywriter or a social media manager or whatever, because I've never done it by myself. You know, you need to kind of get the confidence to be able to say to people, I'm doing this now. Can you, if opportunities come up, or you know of anyone who needs my services, please let them know that I'm available. So that's the first tip. The second one is, and this is a bit counterintuitive, because I'm really not one of those people who says work for free in order to get exposure, because I think that people get taken advantage of.
Definitely.
Particularly at the start of their career. But I'll say there's one circumstance where you can work for free. So for example, if you have networks on Facebook or LinkedIn or even Instagram, wherever you have a network of people who are not doing the thing that you do, then do something like, okay, guys, I'm now available as a copywriter. And in order to get myself going, I will do 5 pieces of work for free for the first people who contact me. All I ask for is that you give me a good testimonial. So that kind of gets it out there that you're doing it. It gives you a bit of experience of dealing with a real client. And yeah, and I guess it'll give you a little bit of confidence as well to say, well, look, I've got 5 clients under my belt. I am experienced now and doing this. So offer it for free or a heavy discount, but that's the only time that you would ever do something for free. The third thing, and I think this is probably a more achievable one for someone who already has experience in the sector, is buddy up. Find someone that you know who's doing the same or a similar thing and just be there for each other, because freelancing can be really lonely and you'll benefit from having someone to have a rant with about those nightmare clients. But also you'll get the recommendations, you know, when they're busy. You know, when I was a freelancer, I, particularly towards the end, before I started working for Sarcoma UK full time, I had a lot of people requesting services that I couldn't do because I didn't have the time, but I was able to say, oh, well, actually, I'm not free, but my friend Lauren, I'll recommend her to you because she's really good. So buddy up with people.
That's great advice. So essentially, guys, your network is your net worth. You need to chat to everybody and be open about what you're doing, because he's working at sarcoma, so you should do it too. That's really cool. So I want to come on to one of my last couple of questions. Mm-hmm. So how do you keep inspiring your team in these tough times? And what is your secret to staying so motivated and enthused? Because you're literally one of the cheeriest people I've ever met. How do you do it? Tell us your secrets.
I don't think you've met everybody who knows me.
It's all right. I've met enough. So
I'll take it, Lauren. I'll take it. It's fine. I mean, just in terms of motivation, I mean, the sector we're in, well, first of all, I've got really great colleagues. Like I mentioned before, we're all working towards the same goal. But I think I know that I'm valued there. And I think that it's a very important thing, especially when you're not in the office now, is to feel valued. So I think dishing out praise to people where you can do that. It's really more important than you might think. I mean, I have friends in more corporate roles, and I've heard the horror stories about not being valued, you know, colleagues actively working against them and that sort of thing. Oh, wow. And that, it just seems so alien to me. But yes, I mean, they might earn more money, but it sounds really dreadful. I have one friend who's a corporate lawyer, and we were talking about my job, and he said, look, I earn plenty of money, but what you do is actually socially useful. All I do is help make rich people richer. And I mean, that's when you remember that keeps you motivated, because what we do genuinely makes a difference to people. And that's quite a humbling thing, and it's a privilege. So in terms of job satisfaction, I mean, it's off the scale for me, really.
Yeah, that's amazing. So if you had to give people 3 tips on how to motivate their team, what would you say? I love three.
You love three?
Yeah, I'm a fan. I think it's just enough.
Yeah. I think the praise element, I mean, the encouragement and praise has to be number one, because we work better when we feel that we are doing a good job and that we are making some kind of difference. Number two, I would try to allow people to do things that stretch them a little bit. I think, again, one of the things I'm a little bit worried about during the lockdown and while we're working remotely is that maybe while some of us that are in maybe more senior positions, we know what we need to do, we can put our head down and do it. I think maybe for some of our more junior colleagues, it can be quite a difficult time because they're in isolation. They don't get the chance to maybe, you know, turn their screen to someone and say, is that right? So I think checking in on people and checking in on people quite regularly is one that I would do. So I think that's my three now, isn't it? So praise, checking in on people, and giving them something to aspire to, stretching them a little bit.
Love it. I can handle that.
Okay.
Andrew, you've been amazing. I've pretty much come to the end of my questions. Yeah, you made it. Well done. But I do like to ask each of my guests a sentence that they need to end, or 3 sentences, shall I say, because I did say like 3.
Okay.
So working for a charity is?
A privilege. you get to do so many things that help you grow, but it's also valuable to so many people. So it's a privilege.
Being a part of the sector is?
It's increasingly enriching. I see more and more collaboration, more and more openness and willingness to share ideas between organizations. So, you know, more of that, please.
And lastly, being seen as an inspiring communicator feels like?
Deeply humbling. I mean, we're in a sector, you know, that typically doesn't have big budgets. We have to be forensically transparent about the spending that we do. And we have people who trust us to do the right thing. And, you know, when people often in very difficult situations communicate with us like we're a friend, I feel very humbling. I feel very humbled. I mean, I want to do right by them. So, yeah. So being seen as an inspiring communicator is something quite humbling.
Oh, you deserve it. You're awesome, honestly. I just want to say thank you so, so much for joining us. I'm sure everybody learned a lot. And I'm glad you've recovered from the dreadful COVID.
Me too. I'm full of antibodies now. I'm indestructible.
He's free, guys. But yes, thank you so much. That's it from me and Ender. And I hope you will all be able to join us for our next episode. Just wanted to plug, the nominations for the Inspiring Communicator Awards 2020 are now open. For those that don't know, it's an annual celebration of those in the sector who were inspirational in their use of communications for a cause or a charity. Don't forget, this is your chance to nominate someone you think is great, so please get involved. Thanks.